It's Sunday, the 21st of February, 2016. Happy birthday to no one. To the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by Moneyball.com.au and Tahoe Duffy. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be a sponsor of the podcast like Tahoe Duffy, it's very straightforward. Leave a review on iTunes. Not only does it help the podcast out immensely and help us get up our iTunes convoluted ranking system, but you get to be a sponsor of a podcast. And isn't that great? You get to hear your name shouted out more than once. Tahoe Duffy, Tahoe Duffy, Tahoe Duffy. All right, we're going to talk NBA. Obviously, that's what we're here to do. There are 4 games on Saturday. There are 10 games on Sunday. We're going to do all the usual things. But before we do that, Michael Bolton, what should we do?
Let's get to it.
I agree. The Facebook and Instagram contests for Saturday. On Instagram, we were looking for Chris Middleton. How many points and assists was he going to get combined? The answer was 16. He went 12-4. No one got that one right, but on Facebook we had a winner, Carl Anthony Towns. How many points will Cat score? And the answer was 24, so shout out to Ryan Humphreys for getting that one correct. And don't forget to enter those contests every day, and it's a little bit of fun. It takes you about 2 seconds to make a guess, and it's fun. I enjoy putting them together, and I know the people who do enter do enjoy doing it. For tomorrow, Instagram contest, Jared Sullinger combined points, rebounds, steals, and blocks. And on Facebook, we're looking at Julius Randle combined points and rebounds. I could pretty much throw steals and blocks in anyway, but they'd be a zero, so it wouldn't really count. That's it. That's those contests done. Let's get into the good stuff, and let's talk monstrous line of the night. And it goes to Klay Thompson of the Golden State Warriors. In a game that the Warriors were up big, the Clippers chased them down, really got close at the end, and were one half-court CJ Wilcox heave away from sending it to overtime. And I retweeted a very funny tweet from Tony Jones from, where's he from? Salt Lake Tribune, maybe. Had footage of the missed CJ Wilcox three-point game-tying shot, and it was pretty humorous. So I do encourage you to either check out my timeline or Tony's timeline. But anyway, the Warriors, they get the win. They're back on track, back on the road to 73-9. Klay Thompson had 32 points. He nailed 4 triples, but he also added 7 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals, and elite percentages, 11 of 22 from the field. And he hit all 6 of his free throws, and he didn't turn it over. Not that he's a really high turnover guy anyway, at less than 2 a game, but when you get 0, it's a bit of a benefit. He is, again, one of those guys who started the season off really slowly, but his last month, he's averaging 25 points a game. He's at 3.5 triples. He gives you a steal a game. One thing that has dropped off from him lately is his block numbers. He was at 0.8 last season. He's 0.7 this season, but his last 2 months, he's less than half a block. And it doesn't seem like much, but when you're getting half the amount of blocks that you were last season, and that was one of the real benefits of his game, it drops him about a round or so in rankings. So he was the 12th ranked guy last season. In the last month, he's 21st. So it does make a bit of a difference. But he's making up for it. But in that last month, he's shooting 50% from the field. He's shooting 95% from the free throw line. So he's helping in other areas. But those defensive numbers, he also hasn't had a block at all in his last 4 games. But that'll start to come back. The steal numbers are well up as well. So he's doing quite a bit. And again, one of those players, you know, lump him in with John Wall, Chris Paul. Thompson's one of them. Nerlens Noel, who owners were, why did I draft this bum? Useless, terrible, done, wrecked my season. Cool. That's not how it turns out. And just, I want to throw something out there. You listen to this podcast for, I don't know what you listen to it for, entertainment. You listen to it for advice, discussion, all that sort of stuff. But I really recommend that nobody ever takes anybody's advice just straight up. I'm doing this because Josh said. As I always tell you, it's always to do with the individual concept of it. Now, there are some things where I say, yes, go and do this, go and do this. But there's always going to be a caveat. Someone might have a super strong team and it doesn't make sense to make a move and grab a guy. But never just take advice from people, especially if I see it often on the Reddit sub, the Fantasy B-Ball sub over there, where people will give advice and someone will go, cool, I'll do that. Look, don't just do it. People will spout out opinions and that's all they are. Nobody can predict the future. I can't predict the future. Nobody can predict the future. And you'll see plenty of things out there where people will say stuff where I just go, well, that's got about a 2% chance of happening. and people will believe it as being fact. And I think what sparked me saying this is a lot of people talking about David Lee in Dallas. Oh, David Lee, he's going to get 28 minutes a game. He's going to start putting up big numbers. And people go, oh, cool, I'll go and make an ad for him. And that's fine, but you need to do your own research. Although I say, okay, David Lee's gone from Boston. Jared Sullinger's going to get all his minutes. David Lee wasn't getting any minutes. So don't expect all this big change to happen that Sullinger's all of a sudden going to play 30 minutes a night because Lee's not there, because Lee hadn't played in about a month. And he's going across to Dallas. He's not going to play 28 minutes. He's going to play the backup minutes behind Dirk, and he's going to have to battle with Dwight Powell. He's going to have, Charlie Villanueva's going to get some of the minutes for whatever reason. He's not going to get big enough minutes. But people do hang on, and it's, again, part of this thing that I talk about often, fantasy basketball psychology. I remember David Lee was an 18 and 10 guy 2 seasons ago. Yeah, he was. He's also not good anymore. And that 18 and 10 nostalgia stays with people. And my overall point is don't just blindly follow what someone tells you via Twitter, what you read in a message board, in Reddit, on Facebook. You need to do your own research and have a look at your own team. And that's what I try to do on this show, is provide information and provide tools and provide opinions without being 100% definitive for everyone's team, because it's impossible to be 100% definitive for everyone's team, because everyone's team is different and is in different leagues, different settings, different scenarios, different situations. Everything is different. I try to provide the information and actionable information and actionable tools for you to make the right decisions. And don't just go and blindly follow something that anybody says without actually applying it to your own team. Because at the start of the season, you would have had people saying, oh, Clay, he's bad. He's really struggling. Championship hangover. Sell him while you can. I don't know who said it, but there would have been people saying that. Chris Paul is done. He's washed up. He's toast. My season's finished. Get something back for him while you can. He's going to sit out. And if you blindly follow this information, you're going to end up bad, worse off than what you already were. So just make sure you're taking everything into consideration, taking the source of where the information's coming from and the advice is coming from before you make wholesale decisions. I didn't really know I was going to get into that much of a rant, so I do apologize. But hey, there is going to be a rant coming later on about a couple of coaches. Do not worry about that. Let's move on to the waiver wire line of the night. And it's Dennis Schroeder of the Atlanta Hawks. Schroeder played 40 minutes and was awesome. 25, 8 and 10, 3 triples, 1 steal, 1 block on 10 of 19 shooting. I've maintained this for about 2 seasons. He is going to be a very, very good point guard. And it's only because he's stuck behind Jeff Teague. And the Hawks don't love Jeff Teague. I know this. I know that they don't love him. They think he's good, but they don't love him. They don't view him as a transcendent piece that he's going to be some awesome point guard. They don't love him. Schroeder is going to be the point guard of the future there. I am 95% convinced, but it's not going to necessarily happen this season. Now, he played 40 minutes because Teague played 18 minutes because Teague was dealing with a wrist injury. So it's not a case of, well, we couldn't trade Teague at the deadline. Cool, you're done, Jeff. Let's just run with Dennis. That's not what happened. But Teague missed a big chunk of the end of the game, came back in, and then couldn't play and was out again. So Schroeder had to play through both overtimes. So that is a little bit worrying for Teague and his wrist. It doesn't appear like it's going to be weeks and weeks of injury, but if he misses 2 games, I wouldn't be surprised. And when Schroeder starts, it's top 50 stuff. That's what he can do. So go and make sure that Schroeder, if you've got that streaming spot, which you should still have, go and add him. See what happens. I know Matt Smith has been big on Schroeder, still maintaining value even in a backup role. I'm less bullish on that. I'm less excited about him being a guy that I'm owning in standard leagues at 18 or 20 minutes a game. But on the occasion when this happens, absolutely. But his overall cumulative value for the season, he's ranked 130th in 8-cat leagues, which is okay for 12-team leagues, and it really suits if you're, say, punting blocks or punting field goal percentage, then he jumps up to being close to a top 100 player. And that's ownable. And then when he gets the extra run, you love what he can do. But he's probably the worst guy on your bench for most of the time until something happens to Teague, because I just don't think he's going to supplant Teague without an injury happening. But for now, if Teague misses 2-3 games, Schroeder's a great guy to target. The young gun of the night. next season, I'm probably going to have to rename this the Memorial Karl Anthony Towns Young Gun of the Night. Next season, he's still going to be eligible for the Young Gun of the Night. I wonder how many times he's going to win this award next year. He played 41 minutes and went 24-8-4. He had a steal and three blocks, 10 of 23 from the field. He went 4 of 5 from the free throw line. He is just incomparable as a rookie, basically. Well, not in recent times anyway. A top 20 player, a top 10 player over the last month. In that last month, he's averaging 21.5 points, half a three, 12 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 0.6 steals, 2 blocks, 57 and 85. And you know what can increase? He's scoring. He can be a 25-point guy. He can be a 1-3 guy. He can be a 3.5 assist game guy. He can be the best player in fantasy basketball within the next 3 years. Absolutely no doubt. You've heard me gush uncontrollably about what Towns can do from a fantasy perspective, and you probably don't need to hear me do it again. So yeah, just know that he's pretty good. The dud of the night comes from Towns' team. It's his teammate. It's his front court partner. Well, it was for half of the game. Gorgui Dieng played 25 minutes and went 3-3 with a block. And this is where part one of my rant comes in. Sam Mitchell has no business coaching an NBA team. None. No business at all. He said during the All-Star break that he is going to alternate starting Zach LaVine and Tayshaun Prince. Which, when he said it, I went, seriously, what are you talking about? How's that for developing guys into a role? It doesn't. It doesn't work. How's that for being pointless? Yep, it's got a big tick for being pointless. So if that's what he's looking for, fine. And then we saw LaVine come out in the first game back. Prince didn't start, true to Sam Mitchell's word, but didn't play at all. And I went, hang on. The old guy, he's come to his senses. Someone's tapped him on the shoulder in Minnesota over the break and go, you can't say shit like that, Sam. It doesn't fly. Your Tayshaun Prince is 85 years old. He's older than you, Sam. There's no need to play him in these last 30 games. Let's just run Zach out there. Let's develop him next to Ricky, develop him next to Wigo, and see how it runs. Someone's told him that, that's what I thought. No, they didn't. They didn't, because Sam Mitchell went out and he stuck true to his word. At least he stuck true to his word. Let's alternate. Let's put Prince back into the starting lineup. Yep, so Prince back into the starting lineup. LaVine back to the bench so LaVine can play as a backup point guard, which is not his position. But then let's give LaVine more minutes than we did as a starter, 26 versus 32 here, or 33. And therefore, let's take minutes away from Gorgui Dieng. Yeah, we'll still give Kevin Martin his bullshit 12 minutes. We'll give Tayshaun Prince another 21 minutes where he scores 0 points with 3 rebounds. They were down 20 points to the Knicks at three-quarter time and had scored 61 points. They'd been scoring in the hundreds prior to that. You limited what Dieng could do so that Prince could play 21 minutes. That is an instantly fireable offense to me. It won't be because Minnesota struggles as an organization, but that is ludicrous. Now, in the next game, Prince apparently will go back to the bench and he'll probably play 0 minutes and we'll see 40 minutes out of Gorgui Dieng. Do not drop Gorgui Dieng based on this. Drop all confidence you have in Sam Mitchell. LaVine's a two. He's not a one. And he played a fair bit of two in this one as well, but they ran no other point guard, no Andre Miller, no Tyus Jones. So all the minutes that Rubio didn't play, the 13 minutes he didn't play as a point guard when he was on the bench, LaVine did. It's unnecessary. Prince shouldn't be taking these minutes away from Gorgui Dieng. He didn't take them away from Zach LaVine, so that's great. But really, it's criminal. It's basketball criminality for Mitchell to make these sort of bullshit decisions. And I know people are going to disagree with me. You have to have Prince out there. He's a veteran. He's teaching them the way. He's showing defense. That's great. But when you score 60 points in three quarters, it doesn't matter how good your defense is because you're going to get smashed. And that's exactly what happened. And you're stalling the development of players together in what could be a young core. Rubio, LaVine, Wiggins, Towns, Dieng. That's your five core guys. Muhammad is the sixth man. There's your six guys. Play them. Work out what they can do together. Work out how they play best. Instead of putting stagnant corpses out there like Tayshaun Prince, Weekend at Tayshaun style, with someone out there, just holding his arms up so he can move and act like he's playing. Because the other team doesn't think he's playing. They don't pay any attention to him. They pay zero attention to him. That's just 21 wasted minutes. So congratulations, Sam Mitchell. You're part one of the coaching rant segment on today. Kurt Rambis, you're coming up soon. Anyway, on to Jeng. Terrible game. Fine. He's been fantastic lately, though. His last month, he's giving us 14 points, 9 rebounds, a steal and a block on 57 and 77% shooting. That's why you've got to stick with him. If Mitchell keeps going back to this ridiculity of him playing 24 minutes a game, then you consider moving on. But don't do it after one game because, you know, each game, everything's going to be different according to Mitchell. So that's great for consistency. Big ups to you. The perfect DFS lineup from Saturday. Here we go. At point guard, Goran Dragic, 46.4. He's thriving. No Dwayne Wade, no Chris Bosh. It's pretty obvious to see that was going to be the case, and it was again. And Dennis Schroeder was magnificent, 48.6. Hard to predict that Jeff Teague was going to play 17 minutes during the game, but he's always a decent punt option. At shooting guard, Klay Thompson, 50.9. Really broke through that really great defense that JJ Redick provides. And I'm not being sarcastic. Redick has been really good at preventing opposition shooting guards from having big games. Not today. And Jamal Crawford keeps up his really strong stretch. He's going to be over 5,000 pretty soon, I would imagine. And that's going to limit some of his value. But 37.1 points for him is pretty decent. At small forward, much like Goran Dragic, Luol Deng, 47 points. It all makes sense if he's going to have a big role. He was massive for the second game in a row. He has to be owned in all 12-team leagues, as I said yesterday. But again, don't take everything I say as gospel. Have a look on your team. If your worst player is Gorgui Dieng, don't make the move. If your worst player is maybe Aaron Gordon, don't make the move. It all depends on how your team is. But when I say must add, it means go and have a look. If he's there, and see if you can add him. See how it plays out. He's not a top 50 guy, Dieng, but he can be a top 80 guy if these injuries maintain. At small forward, Carmelo Anthony, 47.2. That was another one that was relatively easy to predict was going to happen. At power forward, Paul Millsap, 52.2. Great when you go up against the Bucks, big men. And Jabari Parker played 40 minutes for the third consecutive game. Had a career high in scoring, 46.6. He's really, really turning it on at the moment. At the center position, Hassan Whiteside was back from his suspension. He played off the bench and put up a massive 55.6 DFS points. He's always a really nice tournament play, a pretty risky cash game guy, given his role off the bench and his ability to come out and punch people in the back of the head. The total for that lineup would have been 431.6. So congratulations if you happen to have that lineup. All right, it is time for a quick break for a word from one of our sponsors. After we do that, we'll be back to look at the four games and go through them in a bit more detail. All right, we are back. The first game to look at is the Washington Wizards and the Miami Heat. The Heat, the huge, huge win. They're scoring at a remarkably large rate in comparison to what they were doing before with Wade and Bosh in there. It also helps that the Wizards were playing their third game in 3 nights. So looking at the Wizards box score, it's hard to get too downhearted about what we saw from them. Still a nice game from Marcin Gortat, 14 and 13, 2 assists and a steal, playing really well at the moment. And Jared Dudley with another solid line, 26 minutes, 16, 5 and 2 with a triple. Now the minutes are down for him because of the addition of Markieff Morris, but the production is well up. I don't imagine his production stays at this ridiculously high level as Markieff gets more integrated into the system. Now, Markieff was still all right in this one. He played 21 minutes. The shot wasn't there, 2 of 7, but 4 rebounds, 1 assist, 2 steals, and 1 block. He's someone who I think should be owned in all leagues. Otto Porter with a decent night, but not great, 7 and 7 with a steal and a block. And Johnny Wall, he did struggle, 5 of 17 shooting, but again, it's what happens when you're playing 30-plus minutes 3 nights in a row. 12, 4 and 4 for Wall with a block. And Garrett Temple started in place of Bradley Beal. He played 17 minutes. 1 rebound, cool stuff. And Brad Beal played 29 minutes, the most he's played in these last 3 games. Off the bench, 19, 3 and 1 with 2 triples, really producing even in limited roles. But with the 3 games in 3 nights done now, we're going to probably see Beal back in the starting lineup and back to a 31 to 32 minute role. If he goes to 35 minutes, Randy Whitman should be fired immediately. Nene, only 13 minutes, and I reckon that will be more of a common theme for him as Morris gets more integrated into things. I know people hate Markieff Morris and hate the person he is, but he's the most talented power forward on this team by a considerable margin, and he is going to get the biggest role on this team. I am 98% confident that will be the case. On the Heat, Luol Deng, 27, 10, and 4, his second 25-plus point, 10-plus rebound game in a row. 27, 10, and 4 with a steal. I said yesterday he wasn't going to go for 30 and 11 again. I was right, but he went for 27 and 10. They're still very big numbers. His shot was ridiculously good, 11 of 18. He hit all five free throws. It might last when Wade and if Bosch comes back, but for now, you have to love it. Hassan Whiteside was huge, 25 and 23 with two blocks. I'm sure you're all surprised that he didn't have an assist, and he went 3 of 7 from the free throw line, but a massive boost to your field goals, 11 of 15 there for Whiteside, and it doesn't matter if he starts or is coming off the bench, 29 minutes is basically what he's going to get in either position. After a massive game from Josh McRoberts yesterday, he went back to doing sort of Josh McRoberts-y things. 3-3-3 in 19 minutes. He's not a guy that I really love for 12-teamers. And Gerald Green, despite the big role, only had 5-2 in his 29 minutes. Justice Winslow was limited, only 26 minutes in this one. He did have to leave the court with an injury. He did come back, but that limited his playing time. 14-6, a really nice offensive performance for Winslow. He is a stash 12-team league guy. He's a must-own 14er, but in a 12, he's sort of a hold, and let's see how he develops, but not a must-own guy. Josh Richardson played 35 minutes. I really like Josh Richardson. 5-6 with 3 assists and 3 blocks and hit a triple. He's played some pretty big minutes this year, and it shows to me that the Heat do really like him. He hasn't been able to produce yet, but he is a guy that you can get for pretty cheap in dynasty formats, and I think that in a few years' time, he is going to be a really, really decent player. Just another player to add to this list from the 2015 draft class who are very, very good. The next game, the Milwaukee Bucks and the Atlanta Hawks. This game going into double overtime. OJ Mayo played 38 minutes as the starter. 9-7-6 with 2 triples and 5 steals. That's pretty nice. That's really nice, in fact. He's a guy that I would look at in 12-team leagues. But when Jared Bayless returns, his minutes and role will be limited. But early on in the season, he was a guy that had 12-team league value. For now, he's a definite 14-team league guy, a 12-team league maybe. Jabari Parker in 51 minutes, 28-13 with 2 assists. Still doesn't do much block-wise, but him to get 13 rebounds is a good start. For him to be so efficient at both percentages is good as well. And he is a pretty good guy at steals. Didn't get any here, but not a bad night. Greg Monroe off the bench again, 36 minutes, 24-12-4 with a steal and a block. So a nice bounce back after a subpar game yesterday. And MCW, 17-9, a steal, 3 blocks. Pretty much exactly what you want from him now. Double overtime game, obviously got him some extra minutes. And you know, as usual, he was shooting the ball poorly, but every other stat was pretty good. 22 minutes for Miles Plumlee, 6-7 with a block. So just getting you those blocks, that's what he can do. And Chris Middleton had played 48 minutes, only 12 points, but had 4 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 steals, and 2 blocks. Would have been much better if he didn't shoot 4 of 16 from the field. Would have had a really, really good game. And Giannis Antetokounmpo only played 38 minutes because he fouled out, but he was looking good. 19-12 with a couple of blocks. So big gains from a lot of these Bucks players. It's interesting to see Rashard Vaughn. He's got a really nice role on this team. He's not doing much, but in 19 minutes, he played 19 minutes. Well, that's a start. 2 points, 2 assists, and a block. Now, when Bayless returns, he will probably get limited a little bit, but I think he's got a promising future. On to the Hawks. Al Horford, 17-9, a steal and 3 blocks. Paul Millsap bounced back with 27-11-6, 2 threes, a steal and 2 blocks. Those two guys are just really incredible for big men. Kyle Korver is back, 12 points, 3 steals, 2 triples, has to be owned everywhere. And Kent Bazemore, I don't think he's going to come back. 26 minutes for him, 2 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists and 2 steals. He is far from a must-own in my opinion. I feel somewhat justified to see that he isn't actually good anymore because he was a guy that I couldn't believe was good all of a sudden to start the season. But his last month, 2 months have been pretty subpar. And if there's someone else out there you want to grab, I'm all for doing it. Thabo Sefolosha played in preference to Bazemore down the stretch. 34 minutes, 8-6-3 with 2 steals and a triple. He's hard to own as a fantasy prospect. Kirk Heinrich didn't make his debut, but he was available. So they went with Tim Hardaway over him. That's interesting, even with Jeff Teague having an injury. So Heinrich, not going to be much of a factor, unsurprisingly. Mike Scott played 19 minutes as well and had 6 points and 4 rebounds, but he'd need an injury to Horford or Millsap to really have any sort of value. Now, I said promised there was going to be a second coach rant, and I did tell you who it was going to be. It is Kurt Rambis, and it's for a quote that he said at the end of the game, because our boy... He was limited. He played 12 minutes because he had foul trouble, very early foul trouble, 4 fouls in those 12 minutes. And Rambis's quote was, now I need to find it. I don't want to say the wrong thing. Where are we? Probably should have prepared this earlier. Do, do, do. Here we go. All right. This is from Chris Herring of the Wall Street Journal. Rambis, when asked about Kristaps riding the bench for the vast majority of the second half, says he's going to have to learn how to play through foul trouble as he matures. Now, I tweeted back out, how can someone learn how to play through foul trouble if they're not allowed to play through foul trouble? Well, we're only going to get you out there, Kristaps, to see how you can play through foul trouble if you show us that you know how to play through foul trouble. You couldn't say a more stupid thing if you tried. You can't. How can he prove that he can play through it if he doesn't get an opportunity to play through it? It makes no sense. It makes no sense whatsoever. I'm going to let you cook dinner tonight only if you prove to me that you know how to cook dinner. If you don't prove to me that you can cook dinner, then you're not allowed to cook dinner. How can you prove something to someone without being allowed to do it? Kurt Rambis was a horrific coach in Minnesota. He was potentially the worst coach close to NBA history. And now he's back again. Let's hope he doesn't do something stupid in these last 30 games. But that is as idiotic a quote. It's almost as idiotic as the Byron Scott coach from quote from yesterday, talking about D'Angelo Russell being allowed to finish games when he's given the opportunity to start. You would have heard that rant yesterday. Rambis, seriously, play the kid. You're up by 20 points. What does it matter? How's he going to learn to play through it if he doesn't get to play through it? Anyway, Mallow was great. 41 minutes. He's playing huge minutes at the moment. There is always the concern with his knee, but he's just balling at the moment. 30-11, 4 assists, big percentages as well. He is on fire. And this is something that is a pattern for Carmelo Anthony when he doesn't get injured. The second halves of his season are always massive compared to the first half. He is, in the last 2 weeks, a top 15 player. He's at 27-9-5 in that time period, over a steal, over a three, shooting 49% and 92 from the line. He is a top 30 player, and he's another one of those guys at the start of the season. Oh, why did I draft Mallow at pick 20? He's a bum. Well, he's ranked 28th on the season, so he didn't really lose out too much, and he is coming home strong. Yes, the knee is a concern, and I'm guaranteeing he will miss some games down the stretch here. He might miss one, he might miss three. I'm not thinking that he's just packing it in and saying, see you later, boys, until we get to the end of April, but he will miss some games, no doubt, but playing fantastically. Robin Lopez looked good as well, 26-16 with 3 blocks, and I'll say one thing for Kurt Rambis, at least he's not playing Lopez 17 minutes like his predecessor Romeo Fisher was doing with those ridiculous minutes limits on Lopez. Big minutes, big production, he has to be owned everywhere. Aaron Aflalo is getting a stack of minutes too, 11-4-3 with 3 triples in 39 minutes. That's not brilliant, and he's only a contributor really in points and threes, and it depends how it fits your team. Last game, Jose Calderon played 21 minutes. This game, he played 35. 9-6-3. Langston Galloway went back down to 23 minutes, and Jerian Grant was completely left out of the rotation so that Sasha Vujicic could get 7. So that's another plus there for Kurt Rambis. It's hard to own Galloway in 12-team leagues. It's hard to own Calderon in 12-team leagues. I reckon you're probably better off in other areas or just streaming them in when you get an opportunity. Kylo Quinn showed pretty nice numbers. In only 9 minutes, he had 2 assists, 1 steal, and 3 blocks, but he's going to need bigger minutes to really have much of a fantasy impact. And not much else to talk about on the Knicks. For the Timberwolves, Shabazz Muhammad played 33 minutes. He had 20 points with 3 rebounds and 2 triples and a steal. He got really red hot, shooting 8 of 11. I don't love him as a fantasy prospect for standard leagues, but 14-team leagues, 16-team leagues, definitely. Rick Rubio, just the 9 points, but tallied 16 assists and 3 steals. So that's exactly what you would have drafted Rubio to do. And Andy Wiggins went 24 and 5. But the key thing is he had a Richie Beno as well. 2 threes, 2 steals, and 2 blocks, which is not something you get from Wiggo all that often. But he does shine in the bright lights. And by bright lights, I don't necessarily mean big games. I mean the bright lights, the big cities. His games against the Lakers, the Clippers, and now the Knicks. Well, this isn't really a big city game because he's not playing in New York. But against those sort of high-profile opponents, he's been able to put up pretty decent numbers, better than decent numbers. And it's an interesting thing to look at. LaVine played 33 minutes, 14-5-3, so decent numbers. He should be owned everywhere. And I've already given my take on Jing and Prince. the last game of the night, the Warriors and the Clippers. Steph wasn't at his best, shooting just 5 of 15, but 23, 3 and 9 with 3 steals and 3 triples is still an awesome performance, and Draymond got his league-leading 11th triple-double, 18, 11 and 10. Unfortunately, no other stats from Draymond, but a pretty nice field goal percentage going 9 of 14. Harry Barnes had one of his better games, but to expect 6 of 8 shooting from him moving forward is a folly. 18 and 5 with 3 triples. He is on the outside looking into me for 12-team leagues. And with Andrew Bogut out, the Warriors went real small. They started Brandon Rush, moving Draymond to the 5. Rush had 6, 5 and 3 with a steal and a block, but he's the domain of 18 to 20-team leagues. Iguodala went 10, 4 and 5 in a nice performance, and not much else to really talk about. On the bench, the other bench players, Livingston, Spates and Barbosa, they all combined for a total of 8 points, while Ian Clark, Kevon Looney and Jason Thompson failed to register a single stat between the three of them. On the Clippers, DeAndre Jordan, a lot of rebounds with no Bogut, 16 and 21, 2 steals, 2 blocks, while Chris Paul had 24, 7 and 6 with 3 triples. And Jamal Crawford, who I mentioned earlier, he has to be owned everywhere. He is really taking advantage of Blake Griffin's absence. 25, 3, and 3, but added 3 triples and 3 steals. He's going to hurt your field goal percentage. He's generally not going to give you many in the assists and steals area, but he's putting up great numbers at the moment. Wes Johnson played 31 minutes, only 8 points, but did his customary 2 threes and a steal. Didn't have a block, though. And Jeff Green, in his Clipper debut, played only 20 minutes, 5 points, 2 rebounds, and an assist. I don't think that is going to be the case moving forward. I'd be shocked if he'd played under 20 minutes moving forward. But then again, I'm shocked by a lot of things Doc Rivers does. But getting Jeff Green, I would have thought he's not going to play him in a role that sits behind Wes Johnson and plays him near marginally more than Luke Marmute. At least he did reduce Marmute down to 13 minutes. Shockingly, Marmute had a 13 trillion. That's probably not the first one of those in his career. And Cole Aldrich, again, he showed what he can do in limited minutes. Only played 8 minutes. 4, 6, and 2. Now, he is a guy, if Jordan goes down for any long period of time, Cole Aldrich is a guy that I'm snapping up in every single league, because he is going to be a top 70 fantasy producer, top 50 maybe, if DeAndre Jordan goes down. He can do a stack. He's shown it in New York. He's shown it this year in Los Angeles. He can put up big numbers if he's given an opportunity to start. That is the games from Saturday. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back to talk about the 10 games that are going to be happening on Sunday. We're going to get straight into this DFS stuff for Sunday. There are 10 games on, but of course, as usual on a Sunday, there are early games, so make sure you're checking your contests to see which games are actually included. You don't want to go out there and be playing in one that has all 10 games if you're not prepared for that, or whatever. Just check, and it's a prerequisite for every fantasy league you play in. Seasonal, DFS, Dynasty, Keeper, know your settings. And if you don't know your settings, you're going to come unstuck at some point. Let's look at these games now. The first one is the Detroit Pistons hosting the New Orleans Pelicans. The Pistons are favored by 5, and the total is 206. Don't think we're going to see any sort of debut from Donatas Motiejunas. On the Pelican side of things, Bryce DeJean-Jones is dealing with a sore wrist and a cut chin, but he is listed as probable. And a couple of the other traded players, Marcus Thornton, he was available in the last game, didn't get into the rotation. And Jarnell Stokes, who's likely to be waived by the Pelicans after coming across from the Heat. They're not big impact players. Let's have a look at the point guard position. We've got Reggie Jackson at 6,500. He's been okay lately, but not worth a $6,500 salary. Don't love using him here. Jrue Holiday at $7,800. He has been destroying people at the moment. He's averaging 43 across his last five games. He's had a 50-point performance chucked in there. He is Jackson's not defending point guards all that well recently. $7,800 for Holiday feels expensive, but he has been absolutely on fire. He is clearly a much better option than Norris Cole. That's clear to everyone apart from Elvin Gentry, or even Elvin Gentry appears to know that now because he's playing Cole 27 minutes and Holiday 33 minutes, and that's a lot better. As for Cole, he's at $5,100. I don't really want anything to do with him at that price tag, nor do I want anything to do with Tony Douglas at $3,500. For the shooting guards, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope for the Pistons was quiet in his first game back, coming back from that groin injury. His ownership will be very, very low. At $5,300, though, I'm not sure I want to get involved there. Maybe I'd throw him into a tournament, but I'm surely not trying him in a cash game. Bryce DeJean-Jones, even though he's been starting, he's only averaging 16 minutes a game over his last three. His minimum salary, yes, but doesn't excite me. Darren Hilliard and Marcus Thornton, nope. At small forward, a few guys to have a look at here. Toby Harris, that is a very cheap salary for Toby. He's at $5,500. He led the Pistons in scoring in his first game for them coming off the bench. He only played 30 minutes. I think he gets a couple of extra ones in this game. He at $5,500, if he gives you 27 points, you've made value, and I think that he's got a real chance to have a pretty nice game against a Pelicans team who, let's face it, is not ideal. Marcus Morris is at the same price. I would much rather have Toby Harris than Marcus Morris. I think that Morris loses a couple of minutes and a couple of extra minutes go on to Harris, so that's the direction I'd be leaning. And Stan Johnson's at $4,700. His minutes plummeted with the addition of Harris, down to 22 in the last game. He is not a target, nor is Alonzo G. Pretty much if he was playing 50 minutes, I'd struggle to have Alonzo G as a target. At power forward, Anthony Davis is still under 10,000, so we still have to like using him. He dropped 50 in the last game. He had had a bit of a slump before that, and the Pistons have been relatively good at defending opposition power forwards, but I think that I'm pretty happy with using Davis here at that sub 10,000 price. I think that we can expect close to a 50 output. And remember, when the higher you go up in salary, you don't necessarily need 5x. 4.5, 4.7 is probably enough, assuming you've got enough value plays in your lineup. Ryan Anderson at 5,400, he is strictly a tournament option only. He has no reliability for cash. He's not a guy that I'm liking here. And Dante Cunningham, if he cracks 10 points, it'll be a bargain. Anthony Tolliver will probably get the start again for the Pistons, but starting does not equal minutes, and he only played 18 in the last game. He dropped 8 points. He can have big games, but with Morris there, with Harris there, I don't think... You know what? That's annoying. Morris and Harris? I don't like that combination of names. Tolliver's not someone who's going to really have an opportunity, unless an injury goes down, to play 30 minutes. At the center position, Andre Drummond, he's taking on the stiff that is Omer Asik. He's at 8,400, Drummond, and the last time that the Pelicans played against the Pistons, Drummond was coming off that ludicrous game against the Rockets where they fouled him about 84 times, and Elvin Gentry then fouled Drummond, I think, 3 times. So it's fair to say that Elvin Gentry doesn't buy into the hacking strategy, so that means we're going to see bigger minutes for Drummond and the opportunity for him to have a very big game. 40 points is definitely within reach for him here, so I think he's a good option. Omer Asik had a big game in the last one. $3,700 is his salary. 27 points is not bad at $3,700. He grabbed a shitload of rebounds. He's not going to give you much else, but if he can have a double-digit rebounding night and throw in 6 or 7 points and maybe block a shot, then he can return value. He's clearly not number one on my list, but he's someone who I'm not completely ignoring. Game 2 is the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Oklahoma City Thunder. Channing Frye will not play for the Cavs. He still needs to pass his physical to come across. Who else have we got? No one else. Iman Shumpert is considered doubtful. He's dealing with a shoulder issue, so more minutes on the wing there. Point guard, Russ Westbrook's taking on Kyrie Irving. Westbrook's at 10,900. He is money in the bank, 50 points. He's averaging 55 across his last five. His lowest score in his last five is 47. 10,900 is a lot, but there were times last year where he was over 12,000. I don't mind spending up for him if you're finding value in other areas, because it's almost a lock that you're getting 50. On the other side of things, Kyrie gets to take on the Matador defense of Russ. Now, I'm not saying that Russ is a bad defender, but at the moment, opposition teams are getting big numbers from their point guard spot. 77 for Kyrie. He's averaging 40 over 40 points in his last five games. He's averaging over 44 in his last three. At 7,700, I don't mind using it because I think that this could be a game where those two are going back and forward, and Irving, it's not a tough defensive matchup for him. I think that Kyrie is a really decent play at 7,700. Campaign, I don't imagine he gets a huge amount of run, and Dellavedova should get some extra minutes, but it's not going to be enough for me to get overly excited about him at his 3,900 price tag. J.R. Smith with Iman Shumpert out, he should get more minutes. He's priced at 5,100. He is strictly a tournament guy. He can have 30-point games, but 5,100 feels a little bit too high for me. Dion Waiters, if he was priced at maybe $500, I'd have a look. At 3,800, he just does so little with his playing time. And Randy Foye at minimum salary, well, I need to actually see him play a game for the Thunder first before we can get behind him. And Anthony Morrow, same. He just doesn't get enough minutes for us to really care. The duel between Kevin Durant and LeBron James is interesting. Both teams are restricting opposition small forwards. These two guys are defending well, but you shouldn't feel too scared about using them. LeBron has been the superior play to Kevin Durant recently. He's averaging 51 over the last three. Durant's averaging 41. But if we go back to the last five, they're almost equal, 48 versus 49. You've got to spend 200 less for James. It's 10-1 versus 10-3. In the end, they're both pretty nice plays. If I'm taking one, I feel a bit more confident in James's consistency. Durant can have big games. He can have slightly quieter games as Russ takes over. LeBron, you feel like you're just going to get a consistent 45 pretty much most nights. And maybe if you're playing in a tournament, you take Durant. If you're in a cash game, you take LeBron. But either of them are obviously, yeah, really nice options at 10,000. At power forward, Tristan Thompson's been playing exceptionally well. In DFS, anyway, 5,100 for him. He's averaging 31 across his last five. He dropped 38 in the last game. Now, this isn't the same as playing the Bulls. Not as easy a matchup, but I think he's still in consideration and should be in your player pool. For example, Serge Ibaka's at 5,700, and his production has been nowhere near what Thompson's has been recently, and you're spending an extra $600. So Ibaka's not a guy that I'm on. 7,200 for Kevin Love. Well, Tristan Thompson's been outperforming Kevin Love as well recently. Their last five games, the same average. Thompson's beating him over the last three. One of those games in the last three was a game that Kevin Love missed, though. So there's a portion of that that's slightly inflated there. 7,200 for Love. It's not a terrible salary, but it's probably out of those guys, I don't think I'd use any of them. But Thompson might be the guy that I use just because I'm saving an extra $2,000 by using him over Kevin Love. At the center position, Enes Kanter had another double-double in limited minutes in the last game, but he's priced at 5,200. If he was a 3,900 guy, then I'd be all for it. But at 5,200, you want consistent 25-point production, and that's just not what you're going to get. Steve Adams at 4,300 hasn't really shown us much recently, and this is not an easy matchup for centers, so that they can leave both those guys alone. Well, Timo Mozgov, he's at 3,700. He dropped 27 against the Bulls, but it was the Bulls, so we have to take that into consideration. I don't mind him as a cheap tournament punt option. At 3,700, if he gives you 20 points, and he's averaging 17.5 over the last five, he's a big chance of doing that. So he is not sexy at all, but there's a little bit of something there with him. The next game, the San Antonio Spurs and the Phoenix Suns. This has the potential to be ugly. Kawhi Leonard is listed as questionable, so that's an upgrade from missing the last two games, but it's against the Suns. I'm not all that confident that he plays. The Suns, there's value in some of these guys that we're going to talk about, but they're playing the Spurs. But it doesn't mean you're completely immune to having DFS value, especially if your salary is at the right spot. We got some news on Brandon Knight today. Apparently, the Suns, Ryan McDonough, is hoping that Brandon Knight is back within 2 weeks. Now, hope and actuality are different things, but at least there's some sort of time frame on Brandon Knight. So Archie Goodwin remains good for the next couple of weeks, and then we might see Knight back. For DFS at 5,200, I'm not using Archie Goodwin here. Tony Parker at 5,200, you love the matchup. The problem is does he go and play 24 minutes? That's a big possibility because Patty Mills has been playing a lot of minutes lately. Patty Mills at 4,400, I don't mind. He's averaging 27 across his last three, getting some extra run. And at 4,400, if he gets to 25 points, you're set. He is a definite guy in a tournament that could set you apart from some others. Ronnie Price, Ray McCallum, I don't think we need to be too concerned about those players. at shooting guard. Danny Green was terrible in the last couple of games. He always has tournament upside, especially in a game like this against the Suns, but he's untrustworthy for cash. And Devin Booker's at 5,200. It's a horrible matchup for him. His form has been not great, only averaging 22 across his last five. He has had a couple of big games in there, but in general, he's tailing off a little bit, and this is probably the worst spot that you want to use him. At small forward, Kawhi, you'd love it if you knew he was going to play, and if he was going to play big minutes. I can't put much faith in either of those things happening. At 7,700, it's very appealing, but I think you're more likely to get burned than not. PJ Tucker at 4,800, yeah, he's all right, but if Kawhi's on him, forget about it. And Kyle Anderson, if Leonard doesn't play, he dropped 26 in the last game. He's priced at 3,700. He'd be a nice tournament guy to look at to get you the 25 or 26 points. He's not a lock for that by any means, but it's obviously in the realms of possibility, and you're playing against a Suns team who is pretty piss poor against wings. With the power forwards, LaMarcus Aldridge, I'm worried about the minutes. He's at 7,200. He dropped 35 in the last game, but that he had to play 35 against the Lakers. Not sure he really even gets to 30 in this game. I'd leave him alone. The value comes from the Suns. 3,900 for John Lua, who put up 27 points in just 21 minutes, foul trouble minutes, and Mirza Teletovic, who got 35 points in 34 minutes. Now, with Tyson Chandler and Alex Len both looking shaky to play, Teletovic and Lua are going to have to play some center minutes. So they're both in line for some pretty decent run. I like Lua's ability to contribute across multiple categories. So, say for Teletovic, if his shot doesn't fall, he can't do much else. Lua can do a few other things. He can get some rebounds, he can block some shots, get some steals. But both of those guys at those cheap prices, you could do a lot worse than, say, stacking up on, say, LeBron and Westbrook and then putting Lua and Teletovic as power forwards and seeing how it plays out for you. And Boris Diaw and David West don't have much appeal. The other guy to look at is Chris Humphries at 3,900, who dropped 40 DFS points in the last game. And if Chandler and Len are out, again, he is going to have to play 25 to 26 minutes, and he becomes someone who, in a tournament, absolutely, you look at him. With the centers, Len and Chandler, we don't know their status. I'd be really hesitant about using them, and I don't imagine that Tim Duncan plays a huge amount of minutes here. He's at 5,700. It feels too expensive for my taste. The Boston Celtics and the Denver Nuggets is the next game up. The Celtics are favored by 3. The total in this one is 214.5 points. Marcus Smart is dealing with a thumb issue. He's probable, while Avery Bradley is questionable with a left knee contusion that he left the court for the last 3 minutes, I think, of the game on Friday. At point guard, we don't know if Jameer Nelson is going to be back, but I don't think it really impacts Emmanuel Mudiay too much. Now, he struggled in the last game, only putting up 17 points, but he still played 30 minutes. Now, earlier this season, the Boston point guards, they were just ripping opposition point guards, destroying them. But recently, not so much. Their defensive ease against point guards hasn't been as elite as it was to start the season. And that's not to say that Emmanuel Mudiay is going to go out there and destroy people. But at 5,500, he's not a terrible option. I reckon you can probably find better, but he's not terrible. Isaiah Thomas at 8,100, a tournament-only option for me. He's a little bit too up and down. 38 average is pretty nice, but the consistency hasn't really been there for him of late. Marcus Smart, I don't want any piece of, nor Jameer Nelson or DJ Augustine. At shooting guard, Gaz Harris, 4,700. There aren't many really nice cheap options at shooting guard today. Harris at 4,700, you know he's going to get pretty consistent minutes. He's averaging 38 minutes across his last five. His production has increased. He's averaging 26 across his last three. He's not a real high upside guy, but you feel that 23 to 25 points or 26 points is a fairly solid range for him. And I'm okay with throwing him in there if you really need to use a cheap shooting guard. Will Barton's at 6,200. He's been playing a lot better lately. But even when he has a good game, like the last one, it was only 31 points, which is basically just pushing 5x value. You need a guy who is closer to averaging that. And he's not a guy that I'm all that keen on using here. And Avery Bradley with a knee problem, I'd rather look in a different direction. At small forward, Jay Crowder is out of his slump. He's over his ankle problem. 5,900 for him. He is averaging 31 in the last three. So I don't mind using him. He's an okay guy to look at. Danilo Gallinari has been really on fire. Now, his salary is pretty high, but you are almost guaranteed 35 points from Gallinari at the moment. He's at 7,300. He's just going to be consistent. I love him for a cash game. His lowest score in his last five is 27. That's not low, and you feel like 33 to 37 is a great range for his scoring. Evan Turner, if Avery Bradley happens to be out at 5,600. He really vaults into the conversation as a guy that you want to roster in a lot of lineups. He'd been playing pretty well until the last game, averaging 28 across his last five. But if Bradley's out, then he gets more of an opportunity. We already know that Kelly Olynyk is out, so Jared Sullinger at 6,000 has to come into your considerations. He's averaging 32 across the last five in just 25 minutes. And if for some reason he gets 30 minutes, there's 50-point upside with him. And that's, I'm not shitting you there. He's had a 47-point game in his last five. He can do a lot. He dropped 29 in the last game in 29 minutes. He is a guy at 6,000 who can return that value. Amir Johnson doing nothing at the moment. Ken Fareed at 6,000. It's a great matchup for him, but if you're going to expect him to get 30 minutes, I think you're dreaming. And Darrell Arthur, Jonas Jerebko, they can be left alone. With the centers, Nikola Jokic is at 5,200. He has provided nothing lately, averaging 16 points in the last five. He is strictly a tournament guy because in the last five, he has had a 36-point game. But don't be too dissuaded by the fact that he put up 0.2 points in the last game because that was to do with foul trouble. I would be, you can't rely upon him in cash, no chance. But if he gets 27 minutes, it could be all over, especially against a weak front court like what Boston throws out there. Tyler Zeller, at minimum salary, great tournament option, that's it. Yusuf Nurkic at 3,900, again, a tournament guy, but probably a low-end player. And same with Joffrey Lavernier at 3,800. He put up 33 in the last game, but he really took advantage of the fact that that Nikola Jokic was battling with those foul problems. The Memphis Grizzlies and the Toronto Raptors are up next. The Raptors are favored by 7.5. The total is 202 points. Tony Allen is questionable with that knee issue that limited him to minutes less than 20 in the last game. Lance Stephenson, we don't know if we're going to see his debut for the Grizzlies. That's one to watch out for. And on the Toronto side of things, all is good and rosy. Now, Kyle Lowry, he's at 8,800. This is not an ideal matchup, but without Marc Gasol, it frees things up a little bit. Does it free it up enough for me to spend 8,800 on Kyle Lowry? I'm going to say no. Now, Mario Chalmers is interesting, though. He's at 4,700. If Tony Allen is out, he is going to get more run. He'll play more at the two, especially if Lance is not playing also. But even in the last game, he played 27 minutes and put up only 18 points, so not a great return there. We saw when he had to fill in for Mike Conley at the start of the season, he was awesome, but I'm not sure that he can get to that level. Conley, on the other hand, I do like. He's at 6,900. He dropped 41 in the last game. He's averaging 36 across his last three. Extra touches, extra usage, extra responsibility with Gasol out and without Courtney Lee there now. At 6,900, that doesn't feel like a high price for Mike Conley. At shooting guard, Tony Allen, probably not. DeMar DeRozan at 8,200. If you're spending up on a shooting guard, he is going to be the guy. He's going to play big minutes and he's going to put up 35 to 40 points most nights. Now, the matchup against Tony Allen is not ideal because we know what Tony Allen can do as a defender. So that makes him have a little bit of pause about DeRozan, but he's a guy that sort of can push through that most of the time. Terrence Ross at 4,200. The return of James Johnson lops a couple of minutes off him. So he's not a guy that I'm overly invested in. And Lance Stephenson, no thank you. Small forward. Matty Barnes at 4,800. He put up 25 in the last game, which is over 5x value. I imagine if his shot had fallen, he would have been a lot better. He's a guy that I do like at that salary. He's going to get 30 plus minutes. Vince Carter at 3,600. He played a stack and he's actually playing about 20 minutes a game over the last two or three, surprisingly enough. I'm not overly confident in using him. James Johnson starting for Toronto, but that means nothing. And PJ Hairston, nah, he played 7 minutes in the last game, his first game for the Grizzlies. At power forward, Zach Randolph has been playing well. He's been getting a lot of minutes, but his salary is at 6,500, and his production is not really justifying that salary, so I'd probably steer clear of him. I wouldn't mind punting on Patrick Patterson, who dropped 29 in the last game. He's averaging 17 points, and at 3,800, that's basically 5x value, and he can get hot and go big. Luis Scola is struggling to even get to 20 minutes at the moment because Patterson's getting that extra run. So he's a guy that's off our radar. And Jermichael Green has to be onto your radar. He put up a huge 36-point game at 4,200, but it was fueled by an out-of-character 3-block, 3-steal night. Don't get too overly bought into that. He can be really bad, and there's a possibility he's really bad again here. Definitely, you don't want to rely upon that for a cash game play. The centers, Brandon Wright at 3,600. I'm going to need to see him get at least 23 minutes for me to have any sort of interest in using him, so no thanks. Jonas Valanciunas at 6,700. awesome in the last game against the Bulls, put up 41 points. He's averaging 34 over his last three. At 6,700, though, I'm not all that confident against a Grizzlies lineup. Bismack Biyombo, no thanks either. Hey, that's it. The next game, the Charlotte Hornets and the Brooklyn Nets. The Hornets are favored by 7, and the total is 203.5 points. Courtney Lee, we don't know if he is going to play. We need to hear word of him passing his physical. Other injuries, not really any to talk about, so that's great. Kemba Walker has to take on the putrid Nets backcourt. He's at 8,700. It's a lot to spend. You could spend an extra 100 and get Kyle Lowry, but I probably would rather Kemba in this sort of matchup. He's got the ability to go for 50, absolutely no doubt. He's averaging, his lowest score in his last five is 37. That's pretty impressive. I think given how good the matchup is and how consistent he's been, he's a fine guy to spend 8,700 on because he does have 50-point upside. Maybe not all that excited for him in cash, but in a tournament, sure. Donald Sloan at 4,600. We have to talk about him. He put up 37 in the last game. He's averaging 25 in the last three. But there's also massive stinker capabilities. He is a guy that I might look at in a tournament, but I don't want to use him in a cash game. And obviously, the same goes with Shane Larkin. Don't even want to use him in a tournament. At shooting guard, Joe Johnson is at 5,200. It's just too high for me. Yes, he's been playing well, and yes, it's a nice matchup, but that salary is too high. Courtney Lee at 3,700. We don't even know if he's playing at this point, and his ability to produce fantasy stats has been very, very poor so far this year. Don't love him. Nick Batum is listed as a shooting guard. He is at 6,800. I'm pretty happy with using him against the Nets at 6,800. Does he get to 35 points? Well, he's averaging 38 across his last five, so I'd be relatively comfortable with using him, especially after a poor game in the last one, looking for him to have a bit of a bounce back. If you're looking for someone to throw in as a punt option, I don't mind Wayne Ellington at 3,800, but in saying that, I don't love him either. At small forward, Bojan Bogdanovic at 3,600 got hot in the last game, but that only gave him 19.7 points, so he is a no-go for me, and there is nobody else, unless you consider Sergei Karasev an NBA player. At power forward, here is there's a little bit happening. Thad Young is at 6,900. He has been playing sensationally well, averaging 35 points across his last five. It's a neutral matchup. I'm fine with using Thad. He's been pretty consistent. Frank Kaminsky at 3,700. He started in the last game. Spencer Hawes is out, so you can expect minutes in the mid-20s for Frank, but I'm not trusting him in a cash game situation, whereas Cody Zeller at 5,000 has been really good lately, averaging 25 across his last five. He dropped 37 in the last game, and I imagine he still gets minutes in the upper 20s in this one, so he's a guy to have a look at. Marvin Williams at 5,500. I would much rather spend 500 less and use Cody Zeller. Williams has just been not able to produce recently. Not much else from the Nets side of things. At center, Brook Lopez, he's been really good. He's at 8,500, so it's expensive, but it's not through the roof expensive. But there is a risk that he doesn't have a great game. This is not recently the Hornets have been able to yield some pretty decent scores to big men, so he's in a nice matchup spot. But it is a lot to spend. He's had a 19.8 point game in his last five, so there's a bit of risk involved. But otherwise, you know that he can go massive. He had 54 in the last time out. All in all, I'd probably steer clear, but he's a guy to have a look at. Al Jefferson, no. At 5,600, I'm going to need to see a lot more from Al Jefferson before I want to invest that sort of salary in him. The Indiana Pacers and the Orlando Magic, this game is currently a pick'em. The total is 200.5 points. CJ Miles didn't play in the last game. I thought it was a coach's decision. Turns out he was sick. He is ready to play. Great. I don't think that's going to have much impact. He'd been playing about 11 or 12 minutes a game as the Pacers decided the best way is to actually go back to what had worked in the past. Amazing that. At point guard, Brandon Jennings is at 3,700. It's a positive matchup for him at the moment. He dropped 26 points in 25 minutes in the last game. I am not recommending to use him in a cash game, but in a tournament, if Skiles feels so inclined to use Jennings down the stretch again and play him 24 minutes, he could get hot and he could return value. It's not, again, it's not a situation in a cash game where I'm going, yep, Jennings is the starter, let's go all in. Lord Alfred Payton's got a pretty nice spot here. He's at 5,700. That's not a big salary. He'd been at, before last game's, including last game's abomination, he's averaging 31 points across the last three. I'm more weary about using him because of how Skiles is going to stuff things up. But with Lord Alfred, I'm okay with throwing him into a tournament and seeing what happens. George Hill is at 6,000. He's the most expensive of those three point guards. He did have a huge game in the last one. Probably want to go in a different direction though here. At shooting guard, Vic Oladipo was massive at 6,500. The game's hopefully going to be close, so that means that Skiles will play him big minutes. At 6,500, can you hope for him to go for 32 or 33 points? Well, you can hope for it to happen, but it's more of a tournament situation. I don't know. I don't think there's much cash game reliability there. Whereas Monte Ellis at $200 cheaper, is he a better option? Yeah, I'd say they're both pretty unreliable guys to look at. Evan Fournier is at 5,300. He's actually averaging the most out of those guys across the last five and the last three games. He'd be a guy that I'd be a bit more comfortable using, especially if I'm spending $1,200 less on him. You know that Skiles is going to give him pretty good run. He played 42 minutes in the last one. He's going to be the starting small forward. I'm not really concerned about his minutes there at all. At small forward, Paul George, what does he do in this one? He's at 8,700, so it's not an exorbitant salary. I think that he can really have a big impact here. He's averaging 42 across his last five. This has got 40-plus points written all over it for George. CJ Miles is not someone I'm interested in, nor is Mario Hezonja from the Magic. At power forward, Miles Turner at 5,600. He looked awesome in the game against the Thunder, put up 34 points. That salary is not huge. If he gets to 30, he's smashed his value. And with his ability to block shots against a Magic team who allows power forwards to play pretty well in general, I'm all for using him. His opponent is Aaron Gordon, who is priced at $400 more. He's at 6,000, but he's been good. He's averaging over 31 points in his last five games. And at 6,000, you feel pretty comfortable getting the minutes there. Now, he did play 28 in the last game, and that was foul trouble induced, not Scott Skiles induced. So I'm okay with him. I think he gets 30 minutes here, and I think he can be relatively productive. Not sure there's a massive tournament upside, but he's worth looking at. Ersan Ilyasova at 4,900, probably not. And Jason Smith, Lavoy Allen, Andrew Nicholson, we can all forget about those names. At center, Nick Vucevic has been on fire. He's at 8,400. I would much rather use him than, say, use Brook Lopez for that extra $200 or $300, whatever it was. Vucevic is averaging 47 across the last three. He's been relatively consistent. He's had a 54-point game. His floor is a bit higher as well. The matchup's not as good because Yamihimi is a pretty good defender, but Vuce has been great. Speaking of Mahinmi, he's at 5,000. He was offensively explosive in the last game for the Pacers. I'm not expecting points like that. But at 5,000, can he get 25 points? Yeah, I'm not all that invested in him doing that. It can happen, obviously, because he got 40 in the last one. I'm just not all that comfortable with thinking it's going to happen again. The Philadelphia 76ers and the Dallas Mavericks, there's no spread released for this one just yet. I guess it's because Joel Anthony, we don't know if he's going to play. On the Dallas side, there's a few injuries to check up on. Devin Harris is probable to return from his toe sprain. Darren Williams is questionable with an ankle. And the Mavericks just signed David Lee, as I mentioned. I don't imagine that Lee is going to play, but even if he does, I'm not sure how much of an impact it has on... Well, that's not true. I am sure how much of an impact it has. Zero is the answer. Let's look at the point guards. Darren Williams against the Sixers at 6,000. He's been destroying teams recently, averaging almost 39 points a game. If he's ready to go with the ankle problem, love it. If he is out, then JJ Barea would be a sneaky guy. Wouldn't be sneaky. He'd be a great option at 3,600. Ish Smith at 7,000. It's too expensive. He hasn't been able to get over 32 minutes in the last couple of games. His production's been fine, but it hasn't been spectacular. And the Mavericks have been reducing point guards a little bit lately. So not sure I want to use Ish. Isaiah Cannon is a punt option. And Ray Felton at 4,600 comes into play only if Darren Williams misses some time. At shooting guard, Wes Matthews, use him at your own risk. He's at 4,100. The projections actually really like him. I don't, personally. He hasn't been able to get anything going. His highest score in his last five games is just 22 points. He's a perfect tournament option, but really he's been struggling. Nick Stauskas at 3,600. He's a good tournament option. It's a great matchup for him. He can go for 25 points. We've seen him do it in the last few games, but my confidence level in him is pretty low also. At small forward, Chandler Parsons has been really, really fantastic. 6,800 for him. At the moment, a 37 average across the last three. He dropped 41 in the last game. Not really all that worried about the Sixers shutting him down, so he is definitely in play here. Bob Covert, 5,000. you almost have to just restrict him to tournaments at the moment because he can go big and he can also do nothing. But yeah, that's the definition of a guy who's a tournament play. The power forwards. Dirk at 6,600, consistently overpriced. I don't want anything to do with him. 7,100 for Nerlens Noel. I love him at 6,900. 7,100, I'm still okay with. He has been on fire, averaging 35 across the last five. His minimum score is 30 across his last five games as well. He's due for probably a dud, but I don't care. He feels rock solid, consistent to me. Jeremy Grant at 5,000. He's not someone I'm interested in, nor are any of the following. Rashawn Holmes, Elton Brand, Carl Landry, Charlie Villanueva, David Lee, or Dwight Powell. There is a lot of crap power forwards in this game. At centre, Zaza Pachulia is at 5,900. Pretty nice matchup with Jahlil Okafor. And Okafor's not a bad play as well at 6,400. Both of those guys could easily surpass 30 points. I feel more confident in Zaza doing it. He did have a nice bounce back. He'd been a little bit out of touch recently, but at less than 6,000, he's a guy that you need to consider. The next game, the Lakers and the Chicago Bulls. The Bulls are favored by 7. Maybe the Bulls can get another win here. The total is 206.5 points. Kobe is probable with his finger problem. We know that Mirotić and Jimmy Butler are out, and Justin Holiday, who knows if he's going to play. It makes zero difference if he does. With the point guards, Jordan Clarkson is on fire at the moment. He's priced at less than 6,000, 4,900. He's averaging over 30 points in the last five. Very, very nice matchup for him going up against Derrick Rose. D'Angelo Russell, love it if he could play, but at 4,900, he's not allowed to close games. He's not allowed to start games. It's just not happening for him. Derrick Rose at 6,900 has been destroying teams recently, which is great as a Bulls fan. It hasn't necessarily been translating into fantasy stats. He only put up 35 in the last game, and at 6,900, that's sort of right where it needs to be. He's still got a great average of 38 across his last five, and that's really impressive. Fine using him, although the Lakers surprisingly have got a negative ease ranking against point guards, so it's something to keep in mind, but Rose is not a guy that I'm shying away from. At the shooting guard spot, Kobe Bryant, no Jimmy Butler around. That means the Bulls have been really piss poor about letting shooting guards do what they want. Bryant's going to do what he wants anyway. He's at 6,600. You feel like there's 35 points in Kobe most of the time. He's averaging 33 over the last five, so that pretty much says it all there. Yes, he's going to have some bad shooting nights, but he's going to shoot that often that it is going to translate into DFS points. Etwan Moore at 4,300 has to come into consideration. Dropped 28 in the last game, and Kobe, not the most staunchest of defenders. Well, not even Kobe. Jordan Clarkson, not the greatest of defenders. And Lou Williams at 5,400 feels just a little bit expensive for me. The small forward matchup, Doug McDermott put up a huge game in the last one at 3,800. My chances of him doing that again are pretty minimal, but the minutes have been really, they've been there for him. He's been 30 minutes in three of the last four games. The production hasn't equaled that sort of value just yet, but he's averaging 19 points across the last five, and at 3,800, you can't complain with 19 points. Mike Dunleavy is going to need to see more minutes before I rely upon him. With the power forwards, Julius Randle is going to continue to start for the Lakers. He is at 6,300. That feels too expensive, although he's playing against the Bulls. Bulls front court, big stats for power forwards. The projections don't love him, though. I'd be okay with using him, but I'm also weary. Brandon Bass at 3,700. He's been playing way too many minutes, but he's been playing a lot of them. And at 3,700, when you're averaging 20 points across the last three, you have to have a look at him, especially when you're playing against the Bulls. On the Bulls side of things, Taj Gibson's not someone I'm relying upon at the moment, and Bob Portis at 4,100, I'm okay with using him. Now, I don't love him as a standard league pickup, but as a DFS guy at 4,000 or 4,100, he's been averaging over 22 points a game the last five, and that's sort of right where he needs to be. Not massive trust in him, but he's been sort of just doing enough at that low salary. At the center position, Roy Hibbert is at 3,500, huge Bulls bump, but it's Roy Hibbert, so let's forget about that. 8,900 for Powell. He dropped 46 in the last game. Revenge game factor is definitely in play for Powell. Against Kobe, 45 points for Powell. You feel like you can not take it to the bank, but you can be relatively confident that Powell's going to have a nice night, I think. The last game, the Utah Jazz and the Portland Trailblazers. This does not look great from a fantasy point of view. Anytime the Jazz plays, it's never a great sign for the opposition. Shelvin Mack is going to be playing, but we don't really care. Dame Lillard, what do we do with him? 9,600 his salary is. He dropped a 73-point game against the Warriors. He's averaging 52 across his last five. The Jazz, for as good as they are defensively, point guards have been able to score on them. So at 9,600, I'm okay with using Dame Lillard. I think that he's probably not going to do what he did against the Warriors, but he is in some pretty nice form over the last couple of weeks, so he is someone to consider. Trey Burke, Hull, Neto, Shelvin Mack, I don't want any part of that Utah point guard position. With the shooting guards, CJ McCollum is at 7,300. He feels like an okay cash game play, but not real tournament upside at that salary. Alan Crabb at 4,300. Again, he just feels solid. You're going to get 22 to 23 points out of him, but not much more. Rod Hood at 5,900. Not a great performance from Rod in the last game, but he is averaging almost 30 points across his last five. But at 5,900, I'm not sure I want to use him. Gerald Henderson, the minutes are there. The production has been a bit blur. For the small forwards, Gordie Haywood, his price is coming down, which is great. It's at 7,600. It's not quite where it needs to be for me to get too interested in using him. Al-Farouq Aminu has been trash lately, but I do like Mo Harkless. He's at 4,200. The matchup's terrible, but the minutes have been there for him. He's averaging 27 points and 26 minutes across the last three games. Terry Stotts is realizing that he is an actual NBA player and can be a useful contributor. But the problem I have is they're playing him when they go small. And when you play Utah, you don't go small, because they've got Gobert out there, they've got Favors out there. So I think we're going to see more Ed Davis, more Mason Plumlee, maybe a bit more Myers Leonard, rather than that smaller unit with Aminu and Harkless in there. So that might be an issue with Harkless. So my confidence level in him is not all that high. Speaking of Derek Favors, he's at 7,400. This is not a bad matchup for him. Feel okay with using him. Ed Davis, yeah, no thanks. Noah Vonleh, Trevor Booker, none of the other power forwards really are standout. And the center spot, Rudy Gobert is at 7,400, the same as Favors. And I think both of them are in a spot where they can do well. 35 points feels like what they can both do on most nights. Gobert feels the safer guy at the moment with a 31-point floor, but both guys are really solid at that salary. Mason Plumlee at 5,100, he might see some extra minutes with the big guys from Utah, so throw him into a tournament and see what comes out of it. Myers Leonard, Tibor Pleas, Chris Kaman, Jeff Withey, I don't think we need to be too concerned about those guys. Let's have a look at the DFS picks for Sunday. At point guard, Brandon Jennings at 3,700, Jordy Clarkson at 5,900, and Russ Westbrook at 10,900. At shooting guard, Gary Harris, 4,700, Kobe Bryant at 6,600, and DeMar DeRozan, 82. Small forwards, Matty Barnes, 48, Toby Harris, 55, and LeBron James at 10,100. The power forwards, Mirza Teletovic, 4,100, Miles Turner, 56, and Anthony Davis, 9,900. And the centers, Timo Mozgov, 37, Zaza Pachulia, 5,900, and Andre Drummond, 8,400. We're done, guys. Make sure you're checking out basketballmonster.com. Every day over on basketballmonster.com, I write an article called The Morning Update. It houses this podcast, this video, and it has me basically giving a thought on one player from every team of every game that played. So make sure you're checking that out. It has been for subscribers only. I'm going to start making a few of them free so you can see some of the content that we put out over on Basketball Monster, and you'll see that when I tweet them out. So follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball, and you can check out some of the subscriber content on Basketball Monster, and maybe you'd be interested in subscribing and looking at the tools we have as well. But I'm going to put some of those articles out there for free at the moment, so check that out once I do that. Hardwood Proxism is another great site for all your NBA fun and intelligentsia and hot takes and all that sort of stuff. So check out Hardwood Paroxysm and all the other podcasts on the Hardwood Paroxysm Basketball Network. Follow me, Twitter I mentioned, Instagram is the same, redrock_bball, and Facebook is facebook.com/redrockbasketball. Get on Facebook, join in the conversation, tag your mates, get some stuff happening on the posts that I put up on there. We are done today, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.